Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Everyone, I'm Jackie Cooper, Global Chief Brand Officer at Edelman. I'm really delighted today to be joined by Danny von Otterdijk, who's the Group Chief Communications Officer at DP World, a multinational logistics company. DP World was recently awarded a Titanium Lion at the Cannes Festival of Creativity for their work in partnership with Edelman on the amazing Move to Minus 15 campaign. And this was designed to unite stakeholders to change the standard temperature of global frozen food, accelerating decarbonisation without compromising food safety or quality. We are going to discuss this campaign and how Move to Minus 15 earned DP World trust through action in a quite extraordinary way. So Danny, so happy to say welcome to the Trustmakers. Of course, we're going to dive into all the details about DP World's Move to Minus 15 campaign. But first, I thought it would be really nice if our listeners could learn a little bit more about you and your role. So as Chief Communications Officer, sort of what falls within your purview?
Well, first of all, being Chief Communications Officer at DP World has been quite a journey, because in my relatively short time here at DP World, which is nearly 7 years now, the company has transformed incredibly from being just a port operator with 39,000 staff in 2018 to now being an end-to-end logistics company in 2024 with 111,000 staff. So that's quite a significant transformation for any company in any sector. And that has been done with vision and purpose and clarity of thought in the midst of geopolitical turmoil, as we all know, particularly in the last few years, but also grappling with the phenomena of climate change, for example, the focus on sustainable practices in business, as well as the technological advancements that come with that in operating your business and managing your business. So it's been a fascinating 7 years for many different reasons. But with that has come this increased focus on being a responsible agent for good in society, right? People don't just expect your company to create profitability, to create jobs, to contribute to economy, but you have to be a good actor as well. And that takes a fair bit of thinking and creativity at times. And how do you contribute to things that actually make a genuine change? So fascinating time, and I've really enjoyed my 7 years, and long may it continue.
Well, it's always brilliant when a job evolves and a role evolves, because it keeps you on your toes. And for a logistics company to put out this work, which is highly creative, highly impactful, and quite surprising, I think, to quite a lot of people when we were discussing it at Cannes. Can you just explain how your role intersects with that amazing campaign, with the Move to Minus 15 campaign?
Our ability as a company to change things inside the supply chain may seem obvious. Our chairman is Sultan bin Sulaym, who was here at the outset of the company 41 years ago and is still leading us today with the same amount of energy and passion that he's always had. But he's always asking us to think outside the box. Now, that's a bit of a cliche, but it really is so relevant to us. Don't think and focus on what's right in front of you. What is beside it or even behind you? And in many ways, that kind of thinking, that kind of doctrine allows us to look for ways of making things better in more places than you would obviously look. So when our colleagues at Edelman came to us with ideas on how we could contribute to the sustainability narrative, it seemed like a no-brainer in many ways to adopt this whole negative 15 coalition. But I guess the question that everybody asked is, well, hang on a minute, has somebody not thought of this before? I mean, this seems so logical and so obvious. Surely it must have been done before. So I think we spent an extraordinary amount of time trying to figure out, well, is there a reason why it hasn't been done before? Or has somebody else tried it before and failed? Or is it actually ongoing? We just haven't heard about it. So in many ways, it was because of the obvious nature of the idea, we were astounded when we found out, well, actually, no, it hasn't been thought about and tried before. And people have just accepted that refrigeration is set at negative 18. And therefore, people have just accepted that as a fact and that it can't be altered. And again, if I go back to our chairman's continuous challenge of us to not accept the norms and challenge the boundaries, this fell nicely into that.
Did you ever find out why it was picked as minus 18? Because then in all of the amazing amount of research that came up that made this campaign possible, that you could shift by 3 degrees, which had, we'll talk about the impact that has on the world. But did you ever find the beginning of that? Because the simple ideas are always the best, and the most obvious ones, when you realise, are always the most magical. But this was something that had been set in time for a long time.
When you go to Google it, for example, you find a lot of information about the what. It's set to negative 18 degrees. These are the types of machines that you can have, be they containers, refrigerators, large refrigerating warehouses, etc. You can find a lot of the what. You just cannot find anything about the why or who set it at that. And I think it's probably one of these things that industry standards do, right? Some an industry body sets a particular standard. They have scientific research to back that that's the right thing to do. And then it's accepted as fact for probably a very long time until somebody finally stands up and says, well, why is it so? And we see this not just in refrigeration. We see this in many different areas of industry. But we are quite delighted that this, what is effectively a really simple idea and also a very simple act to turn down your refrigeration, is going to make such a massive difference. And it's now about forming coalitions. It's forming coalitions with credible partners who can make things happen, who can create this what we call movement, because that's ultimately what it is. It's people adopting it. And they broadly fall in three categories, Jackie. So you have the early adopters naturally who say, yes, of course, this makes sense. We will do that. We'll see the benefits of it because it saves money. It saves CO2. It saves all these other things. Then there are those people who question and say, well, there must be a reason why it was set to negative 18. I mean, why is that so? Show me the science. And when you show the science, then they naturally say, well, that makes sense then. And then you will always have those people who are suspicious of it and say, yeah, but there must be a reason for it, right? Let's do the research first. And we want to be absolutely convinced before we do something like that because we don't want to lose our product. That broadly is still the case. But there are far more early adopters and converters than there are naysayers.
I guess everyone's aware of the responsibility more to the planet. And we certainly see that businesses are stepping up more into trying to help and support what maybe government can't do by itself. You know, DP World has landed on this, as you said, as a sort of movement. It's way beyond DP World. And you've led this, but you've got 60% of the industry with you now, which is an absolutely, to your point about the three levels, that's an extraordinary achievement. How did you launch this and what kind of feedback did you initially get? Sort of just flesh out a little bit about those three levels. Do you find that people were aware of the impact beyond the tagline? Because I think that's where the Titanium Award came in. There is world change. There is planetary change with this. Do you think that that made those naysayers come on board more quickly? Because this wasn't a marketing campaign. This was actually a campaign with impact and purpose for proper change.
You talk about three stages. I think there was probably a fourth. And the fourth was right at the beginning from ourselves, which was, well, there must be a reason why this can't be. You know, that's the first question I asked when it was brought to me. Surely, you know, other people would have done it by now if that was possible. So our own validation process of, well, really? You know, why did we not know this? And for me to convince the CEO of this board to turn their containers down to negative 15 was met with the same question. Are you sure about that, Danny? So there's this first stage of validation for ourselves. But I guess in many ways, as an industry leader, we have positioned ourselves as a voice of authority. So when we did approach the partners to be part of this movement as a voice of authority, I think it helped for us to have that kind of conversation with our partners to say, well, look, we've done the research, we've done the thinking around this. And as incredible as it may seem, nobody had thought about this before because we accepted the standard number of negative 18. So the conversations were helped by bringing in an independent expert in Thomas Eckerson to help us convey that message to other stakeholders. So it wasn't just something driven purely by DP World, but by independent points of view. And actually convincing and coalescing with partners was a lot easier than what I thought. Somebody used a while back that the analogy of sheep. I guess when a small bunch of sheep go in a direction, the rest will follow. And it's a little bit like that, right? Once you get a decent sized coalition together that moves in a particular direction, the rest says, well, hang on a minute, where are all these people going and why? And maybe we should follow. So having garnered the 60% or so of industry leaders in this space to go in that direction, I guess eventually the rest will follow. And even the deepest naysayers will eventually say, well, if it's good enough for 80% of the industry to do this, then perhaps we should too. We are convinced that in good time, negative 15 will be the default temperature, and that will then have the desired effect that we think. And by the way, for us, this is not a singular idea. And the very building here I'm sitting in, which is our global headquarters here in Dubai, our headquarter building, alongside the three other buildings that are part of our operation, are all powered by solar panels. We are completely off the grid here. So that is also a testament to we don't just say, but we also do. A lot of the cranes that operate the machinery and lifting the containers and goods from ships to shore and back again are all solar power operated. So we don't just talk about doing these things. We actually go and do them. And that's another thing I love about this company. It does what it says.
It's amazing because that titanium is awarded for game-changing creativity. Do you think that this has changed your industry now? Do you think that the kind of notion of very stellar creative thinking in an industry like this, with an award like this, means that there's a sort of shift in what you think you can do, not just at DP World, but in the industry writ large?
I think what it's done is that it's inspired people to actually look beyond their own fence line, if you will. You know, most companies tend to look for improvements in performance, improvements in their sustainability performance, improvements in their operational elements inside the fence line of what they think they control. And that's obvious. We all do that, right? We all like to clean up our own back garden to make sure that it's right. But what it's done is it's made people look outside of our operations and look beyond our sphere of influence. And I notice it now with our ops and planning teams upstairs and even our innovation teams, who are constantly looking for new ideas and thoughts that people hadn't thought about before. So in many ways, it hasn't just created a movement for negative 15. It's created a movement for what else can we do that is actually relatively easy to do, that can be done by a movement rather than by creating a new piece of technology or inventing something or that. And I have no doubt there will be other ideas that come on the back of this that will really create, you know, benefit for us.
The other aspect to this that I love is that, as you know, the Edelman Trust Barometer and this podcast is all about trust. And we normally sort of think about B2C brands building trust with consumers. But what do you think is so important about trust for B2B brands like DP World? And do you think that your trust level has been increased by you stepping into this space?
So I think in the logistics industry has really risen above the parapet, if you will, during and post-COVID. When the world started to shut down, everybody started to wonder, well, where are my vegetables and where are my consumables going to come from? How is that going to work? And we kept the world moving. You know, supermarket shelves kept filling and goods and services that were available kept being delivered, which was not easy, as you can imagine, with the constraints that were in place. So in many ways, and in an odd kind of way, our industry became more prominent as a result of a global pandemic. Having said that, the focus on supply chain resilience and the focus on being responsible in supply chain has also taken a greater focus. So, you know, carbon emissions is the obvious thing, but also, you know, optimizing of processes. You know, the logistics industry is still being seen as the last bastion of inefficiency. If you think about how you move goods from say East Asia to Western Europe, you know, the traditional route has been through the Indian Ocean, the Red Sea, the Suez Canal, the Med, and then into Europe. And of course, with the issues we face today, and particularly in the Red Sea, for example, but also in the Black Sea that serve Eastern Europe, people are actively asking us, yeah, but there must be alternative ways of doing it in a cheaper fashion and a more secure fashion, but also in an environmentally more sustainable manner. How would you do that, DP World? So we're not just being asked to deliver goods from origin to destination or from factory floor to customer door, but we're being asked to do this in ways that is going to answer a whole host of issues that the world has, resilience on the one hand and responsibility on the other. And that's challenging, you know, because you look at the world map and there aren't that many trade routes. And you've seen the lowering of the water in the Panama Canal, for example, which means that types of vessels that can go through the Panama Canal are also now fairly limited. So what do you do? Do you go over the top through the Arctic or down the bottom around the Capes? And of course, going around the Capes to the bottom is also going to create A, more cost, B, more CO2 and carbon, and C, more time. So the industry is facing significant challenges, not just in the climate area, but also in the resilience area. And I think it's a really fascinating time for us to put our innovative, creative thinking caps on and come up with solutions such as the Negative 15 movement that will answer some of these issues that we face as a human race almost. And, you know, as consumers, we demand things faster, quicker, you know, with more surety. But at the same time, the world is becoming more complex. So it's an interesting dynamic.
It's an interesting dynamic because we need our goods, but then we're also critical of the levels that we're hitting in terms of sustainability and climate. So we're critical in terms of the levels that we're hitting in terms of sustainability and climate. So it's a balance because we want what we want, and we definitely felt jeopardized by access to goods during COVID. And that's such an interesting point that you kept the world moving when we needed that so badly. But we're also so critical as businesses and as consumers of the impact that we have on the world. Do you think that was one reason that you were able to get a coalition of the industry together, because everyone's aware of trying to answer that while still keeping the world moving? Do you think that's one reason why this campaign spoke so magnetically to the industry? We get asked for movements all the time. That is a very, very hard thing to have achieved, because coalition, especially of competitors, is not an easy thing to manage.
You talked about trust before. You have to have a certain amount of trust to even start something like that. Why would anybody even answer the phone to you when you say, hey, I have an idea, I think we can reduce our refrigerated containers to negative 15 degrees? So if trust is not part of your DNA, then it's going to be a very difficult conversation to have. Just going back to movement and how one thinks about this is, in our industry in particular, and you touched on it, Jackie, our customers, and whilst we may be a B2C brand, I'd like to think of us as a B to almost C brand, because we have millions of customers, right? They may be the big consumer brands that you think about, but they could also be, you know, smaller farmers in Africa that want to take their goods beyond their 20-mile radius, but to, you know, a supermarket in India, for example, or whatever. So consumers come in all shapes and sizes and in all places and spaces. And therefore, I think it's important for us to A, be mindful that millions of people look at what we do, how we behave and what we say, not just thousands or even hundreds. And if you think about it, just 10 years ago, we probably only had about a dozen customers that were mainly shipping lines who would come to our ports. So therefore, logisticians come in all types and all forms and in all places. So therefore, building trust is really important. And I'll go back to what I said at the beginning, to be a good actor and to behave responsibly in the places where we operate is paramount to us. We're very much a local operator. So in the 80 countries where we operate, we have a policy of always employing local people. So Angolans in Angola, Pakistanis in Pakistan, Dutch people in the Netherlands, and so on and so forth. So we try to make sure that we employ local people and therefore become part of the local fabric and therefore build that trust that way. But also to contribute beyond what is our fence line, right? So contributing to society, be it through a partnership, a sponsorship, an education program, whatever it is all part of how one builds trust, which then allows you to stand up and have a voice around an issue such as a movement to negative 15. Because without doing all that work beforehand, nobody will listen to you or trust you that what you're saying is credible. But we all know trust is hard earned and easily lost. So we work very hard in trying to continue to build that and do the right thing.
Well, I think it's a great testament to the trust that you have, that you were able to sort of leverage those relationships and that people allowed you to be an authority in your industry to lead on this campaign. And I know, because one of the jurors told me that there was quite hefty conversation about should a shipping company be given an award like this, to the point that we made earlier about, well, you're moving things and is that sort of burning up energy? But almost the conversation went to become unanimous, which was amazing, in that, well, hold on, if a company like DP World can't do this, then who can? Which is a massive testament to where you've been positioned, but also that you've not rest easy on your laurels for that. You've actually taken this to a level that's highly creative but highly impactful. One thing that we sort of talk about is multi-local. I think it's really interesting when you have a global company. And in the last 2 days, I've had 4 clients ask me about this. You know, we don't have a huge budget for this particular thing. We're a global business, but we want to be relevant to the local markets. How much are your local markets to how you've just expressed that you've got these you know, extremely close spokes with all of these areas that you support. How much are they aware of the campaign, or is it something that doesn't sort of really hit them in the way that they liaise with you?
I think it's fair to say this particular initiative has had different impacts in different places. And what I mean by that is in places like Western Europe or Europe as a whole and North America, a very significant impact because these things have been at the forefront of focus for quite some time. But equally, you could look at other parts of the world where it's simply not been a thought in people's minds. And when you bring it to them to say, this is what we're doing, and then you tell them about the impact of what it means and how easy it is to do, it's, well, that's great. But we also have lots of other issues, infrastructure, roads, economy, this, that, and the other thing. So, of course, it means different things to different people. But without a doubt, there's not been a single customer or stakeholder anywhere in the world who said this is not a good idea. Nobody will tell you that. As I said, people are first of all surprised, then engaged, then want to action, and then want to move forward to what's next. And that's now, you know, one of our key focus areas is once we have 100% of people on board, it will be now what else is there? What else can we do in and around this area? And there's so many things that we are focused on at the moment, both in society, educating people, helping people understand. And one example, if I may just share with you, you know, we have a port in Senegal in Dakar, and the government was keen to move the port out of the city center and south of the city, A, to avoid congestion, pollution, and delayed waiting times for cargo to come into the country, which made obvious sense. And many countries do that. But they moved the port some good 60 or 70 kilometers south of Dakar. And when we did the community study, we realized that a lot of the communities in and around the port who would then provide the labor were actually off-grid and didn't have access to electricity. And in order to build a grid that far away from a main city center would take quite some time and an awful lot of money and resources. So the solution was to create a college, a university, if you like, a tertiary education facility, where the women of the region would be invited to become solar power engineers. We looked at the social dynamics. Typically in those villages, men would go to work. The farming communities or factory workers would go to work. The women generally stayed at home as a general rule of thumb. And therefore, that was actually an untapped education force that we could tap into. And now we've, you know, educated nearly 2,500 women to be solar engineers who have empowered, so to speak, their own homes so they can install solar panels, wire them up to their homes, and make sure that the power from solar panels is harvested in batteries that can then be used to power, you know, refrigerators and microwaves and all the other modern conveniences that will help make life easier for them, but also means that simple things like light bulbs and other facilities are available, which will help communities grow and therefore help with education of people and children in particular, which is always good for the economy, good for local operators like us. It's truly a win-win scenario. So rather than look at the obvious, which is, well, let's build a grid then if it's not available, actually, what are the other ways of doing it? Can we bypass the grid? Well, who can we educate to create this? Oh, well, actually, there's a whole segment of society that is keen, willing, and able to do this. And we call the college Solar Mamas, which is a name invented by the local people. And it's become a really fantastic story in a place where you thought, how on earth would we do this? And that's what I mean about thinking outside the box, which is our chairman, Sultan bin Salim, is always challenging us to do, is to don't look at the obvious problem in front of you. What are the other options on either side? And that's, I think, a great lesson for all of us.
The sort of inspirational thought of being lateral like that is just actually fantastic, Danny. And the stories that you share were, I think, are so surprising for what you would assume wrongly a logistics company would do. So I do think that you're really showing up in ways that are unusual, and obviously what every company aspires to do, which you're demonstrating, is to actually make an impact beyond the daily role of the daily business. And thank you so much for revealing a little bit behind the curtain of probably an industry that a lot of us aren't aware of some of the details. It's an amazing campaign, amazing impact. So good of you to spend the time. So thank you for your insight. Thank you to everyone for listening.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.